As we mentioned last week, we are long overdue for a focus on individualized health care. We may know someone named Norm, but we don't know anyone in that category of normal. The question is simply this: disease care or health care? I know which one I choose. In the book, The Disease Delusion, Dr. Jeffrey Bland explains what functional medicine is and what it can do for us. Dr. Bland offers achievable, science-based solutions that can alleviate common conditions and offers a roadmap for a lifetime of wellness. Part two with Jeffrey Bland is coming right up. I'm Robin Clare. Stay tuned. This is Tributaries.
I think you just said it beautifully. You know, we have moved within the last 15 years from an era of what I call the age of the average, where we talked about people as part of the massified society. We're all kind of grouped together in this, medicine for the average, to where we've moved to the age of the individual, where we recognize that we are all uniquely different. We respond to our lifestyle, our diet, and our environment in unique ways, and our genes are there to empower our good health if we just send the right messages. And I think, you know, let me use an example of this that is probably on the minds of most people, and that's this recent kind of revolution of understanding about gluten and its effect on our immune system. I mean, here are these grains that we've been eating for a long period of time that we've considered to be very good parts of our food supply that carry a lot of good vitamins and minerals and fiber. So we talk about whole grains as being beneficial. And then suddenly we find out that there are those individuals who have reactivity to a protein, family of proteins actually, that are found in grains that are called the gluten-related proteins. And therefore they have this gluten intolerance or gluten sensitivity. At first we thought this was only related to a very small number of people that had what's called celiac disease. And this is a very extreme example of an immune response to the glutens in grain protein. And these people could get very, very serious diseases of the intestinal tract and elsewhere in their body if they ate gluten-containing food. So we said, yes, that does appear in some people, but it's very, very infrequent in a small number of individuals. Over the last 10 years, however, we've come to recognize that there are many more people than those that have celiac disease that have some degree of gluten intolerance. And therefore, it's not as isolated and infrequent that a person might have a problem in their immune system from consuming these foods as we once considered. Now, why has that suddenly been recognized? It's been recognized because we've finally started to move away from just the assumption that if the food is good for most people, it's good for everybody, to recognizing what the Greeks told us long ago, the food of one can be the poison of another, based upon your own individual uniqueness. So I think this is an example of this transition we are having right now in thinking, going from the thought of health of the average to health of the individual. And we've moved away from this concept of medicine for the average to medicine for the individual. And that is to answer that question related to our each individual function. So once again, I come back to why we've been so interested in the concept of functional medicine, of really focusing on people's function, not just on what we call their disease.
Are the seven core physiological processes your contribution to the functional medicine system, or was it a basic format already that you drew into functional medicine?
Oh, that's another tremendous question. The way that the functional medicine concept emerged was, and I really give credit to my wife, Susan, for this. I have been doing a lot of traveling talking and teaching and lecturing with doctors around the world for a number of years, traveled over 6 million miles. And she said, you ought to sit down with some of your great thought leaders and really ask the question, what would the best medical system look like if you were to start with a whiteboard with an empty piece of paper and just start designing what it would be? Because you've had the privilege, Jeff, of meeting some of the great thought leaders and thinkers around the world in biomedicine. So we put together for 2 years in 1989 and 1990 a thought leaders consortium where we invited some of the people that we had met that we thought were really from different disciplines doing things interesting in the area of healthcare. And we sat down actually in Vancouver, British Columbia, on Vancouver Island, Victoria, actually. And we spent 3 or 4 days, both in 1989 and 90, kind of with this concept of saying, what would the best healthcare system look like if we didn't have to worry about things like reimbursement and credentialing? And we just really talked about the fundamentals of what a good system would be. And from that emerged the concept of this functional medicine model. And in so doing, we all came kind of loaded with our research papers that we thought would describe what this kind of medicine would look like based upon what had been published in the medical literature over the previous years. And as we started to sort that literature, and we each, you know, had our favorites, so we had literally thousands of medical research papers among the group, we started to sort them into what we considered to be common areas. And when we sorted those papers, we ultimately agreed that they kind of sorted out into 7 core piles. And those 7 core piles were what we called the core physiological processes, and that breakdowns in one or more of those 7 core physiological processes was what gave rise ultimately to the whole family of different chronic diseases. So these were kind of the explanations of the cause of the disease rather than just what we call the disease. So we started in 1991 when we formed the Institute for Functional Medicine to really deeper drill into these 7 core physiological processes to see if they really did represent, based on our understanding of human physiology and function, core principles. And over the last 25 years, the more we look and the more we deep drill and the more that is published in the area of research, both clinical and basic science, the more these appear to be really very fundamental core processes that underlie the origin of most all of the chronic diseases. So that's what we call the 7 core physiological processes that are really kind of the cornerstone of how a functional medicine doctor is trained and thinks about the origin of health problems in their patients.
One thing that I really appreciate is that this work is really drawing in those mavericks from years ago, like Linus Pauling. You mentioned Linus Pauling, and so these early medical researchers whose work really weren't acknowledged now are fitting right into a new mainstream.
Yes, I think that is the excitement for me. It's a period of convergence. You know, I think what happened over the previous 50 years in medicine is that we got more and more into subspecialties and more into knowing know more and more about less and less until we know everything about nothing. That's a little bit of an exaggeration, but I think what we're witnessing right now is a different approach. We're witnessing people who are from all sorts of different disciplines with different specialties and different bodies of knowledge who are saying, you know, I can't answer all these problems with my own extraordinary knowledge in the absence of communication with my colleagues. I need to find other perspectives. I need to bring my knowledge together to really create a bigger understanding of why people get sick and what we can do about it, because the model that we're using right now is just not really working very effectively. We're still seeing a rising tide of chronic illness, and we're still not seeing people really get well. So I think that convergence has been a really extraordinary thing to witness and to be part of, because people are breaking down barriers and they're starting to kind of recognize that they can't be the answer all to all questions. And so we are seeing in functional medicine kind of a reflection of this. We're seeing people come from every subspecialty, from academic research centers to clinical centers, people who are family docs all the way up through subspecialists, and starting to collaborate in really asking the question as to how do we really improve people's life experience and reduce the burden of disease throughout the course of their whole human experience. And that, of course, is what the book The Disease Delusion is all about, is trying to take those concepts and make them accessible to the reader to say, hey, you know, we don't have to wait another 50 years before we get there. These things are happening right now. We just need to find ways to implement these concepts and hopefully take steps as individuals. You know, all of us are healthcare consumers. There's not a single person, be it a healthcare professional or not, that's not a healthcare consumer. So how are we going to control our own destiny, each individual of us, so we can produce a trajectory of good health that will be what we want when we get to be 60, 70 years of age, and we still would like a lot of other things that we could do that only will come with reasonably good health.
Yes, and your book, The Disease Delusion, is so fantastic because it does bring a lot of personal power to the individual. Just by reading this book, you not only explain so many things, but you give them questionnaire where if you check X amount, then you might want to start looking at certain things in your own environment. And I might add that you're a wonderful communicator in that this book is not just for a medical doctor, although they certainly would enjoy it as much as anyone who's just picking it up. And the whole thing about medicine, you speak in your book about epigenetics as a subplot, and medical history is nothing less than this highly taught mystery novel to me. You
that's
know,
it's, right. That's a beautiful, I got to remember that. That's a very good way of describing it. It is. It is truly the most remarkable mystery novel that's unfolding around us. And we happen to be living right now in a time, an epic time in history, where we're right into the juicy part of this story. I mean, this is really
yes.
an extraordinary period of time.
There's a big difference, as you mentioned, between boosting the immune system and restoring it. So I'm wondering if you can share a little bit about this and our organ energy, the bank account, and functional reserve that we have, and reason why we want that.
Yes, our immune system obviously is so important to be working 24/7 for us, to protect us from all sorts of stuff out there that would love to live inside of us and take over, bacteria and viruses, and you know, it also helps to protect us about things that we've had injuries, so that we can recycle and make new tissue in response to an injured tissue. So the immune system is an extraordinarily important part of our life experience and maintaining good function. And as we've been told, as we grow older, our immune system tends to lose some of its power. And so, you know, that's one of the explanations that people provide as to why we get sicker as we get older, that our immune system has lost its capability. And so then the question is, okay, how do we boost our immune system? And I've always been a little bit opposed to that term boost, because the beauty of our immune system is that it's able to, when it's working right, it's able to find just the right balance between being ready and poised to jump out and do battle for us, and also to kind of retard its activity and to go quiet when it's not needed. So it has this extraordinary yin and yang kind of balance capability between being active or inactive, depending upon the level of need that the body might have to maintain its function. So when we talk about boosting the immune system, somehow that sounds like pushing the envelope, and all the members of our body's immune system, all of our artillery and the heavy fighters are all activated on the front line to do battle. They're all in battle garb and out there fighting. And that's that can be actually not so good, because if we start doing overly active fighting, we can then have what we call unintended consequences, collateral damage to the good guys, which are our host body tissues and cells, and that can produce injury. And that injury that can occur from an overactive immune system can result in all sorts of different types of damage. With that in mind, then, what we really want to do is to find ways of activating the balance of our immune system, so that it is finding the right place to do battle and the right place to be at rest. And I think that that concept of balancing the immune system, as contrasted to boosting the immune system, is a very, very important concept, and it's something that we focus on in the functional medicine model. And so you say, well, where do you start if you want to balance the immune system? And I go to the place where most of the immune system is found in the body. And for most people, that might come as a surprise, it's found in the intestinal tract. That's where 65% of our immune system resides. And therefore, if we look at the intestinal immune system, this is called the enteric immune system, or the medical term would be gastrointestinally associated lymphoid tissue, or GALT, that immune system that's clustered around our intestinal tract is the place where I would first start to rebalance an imbalanced immune system. Now, how do you do that? Well, this gets into some fairly interesting discussion about the fact that our intestinal tract is the place where our immune cells are in direct contact with our not only our diet, because the things that we eat are going to travel down through our intestinal tract as they get digested, but it's also in direct contact with the living critters, the bacteria that live in our intestinal tract, which is called the microbiome. And those intestinal bacteria, of which there are literally thousands of different types in our intestinal tract, can have personalities of their own. They can either be friendly, or they can be kind of neutral, or they can be hostile. And if we have too many of the hostile ones and not enough of the friendly ones, is the difference between symbiotic bacteria, friendly, and parasitic bacteria, which are the hostile ones, then we can start to have these imbalances in the way that our immune system sees our intestinal content, and it now feels itself at war, and it gets itself overactive, which then we call inflammatory diseases. Inflammatory diseases include the activation of the immune system associated with arthritis, with obviously atherosclerosis or heart disease, with if it's in the brain, it has to do with dementia. We have all sorts of chronic diseases that are associated with this activation of the immune system in an inflamed state. So we in functional medicine think of the first place to go to start to rebalance the immune system is in the intestinal tract. And the program that I describe in the book, we call the gastrointestinal restoration program, is where utilizing appropriate foods, prebiotics and probiotics, we start to rebalance the immune system at the gut, which then signals to the rest of the body immune system balance, which then reduces inflammation and improves function. So that's a specific example of how the functional medicine model might differ from that of a traditional kind of drug approach where you treat the effect, you treat the inflammation at the site, like using an anti-inflammatory, versus treating the cause, which is the imbalance in the immune system that starts in the gut.
Yes. How do you see diagnostic protocols changing with this new paradigm of medicine? Are you seeing them happening, or have new diagnostic protocols been developed?
Yes, the answer is, I think, very exciting, because we've seen many new what are called biomarkers. These are the kinds of things that the body presents that can be analyzed using new technologies to really evaluate kind of the functional status of the various seven core physiological processes that we were describing earlier. The one I've just been describing is the gastrointestinal system. That's one of the seven core physiological processes, and there are new tests that can be used that are non-invasive and don't require a person to be put in a kind of a compromised situation to get the information about the function of their gastrointestinal immune system. Similarly, there are now tests that can evaluate the presence of various inflammatory components of our immune system, things like hsCRP, which is a blood chemical test that helps to evaluate levels of inflammatory potential in the individual. So there are literally hundreds of new types of biomarkers, new tests that are being developed that really assess function rather than just assess the presence of disease. So I think this concept that we emerged in 1990 called functional medicine is really starting to get wind in its sails, because what we're starting to recognize is that the earlier that we can start seeing something, the easier it is to intervene and to improve the outcome. The later that we wait until a person has a very serious disease and we're just diagnosing the disease using a traditional diagnostic method, the more difficult it is then to manage it and the more hard-hitting the therapy becomes.
And then talking about a hard-hitting therapy, is that where you might see the usefulness of pharmaceuticals, whereas if you start catching things earlier on, then it is just solely a dietary and, you know, not just solely dietary, but a whole lifestyle change perhaps, but where...
Yes, I think that's exactly right. You know, there are certainly places for pharmaceuticals. There's no question about it, and we're lucky to live in a time where we have this broad range of options. I think the difficulty often is that if a person thinks all they have is a hammer, then everything is going to be like a nail. They're going to pound with that hammer. Fortunately, now we recognize that there are many, many different tools. We don't always have to jump right to the hard-hitting drug to treat something. If we can assess its change early and we can modify appropriately to that individual's need, the drug may not be the best treatment because the drug may actually produce a series of potential adverse side effects that are worse than what we're trying to treat. So the earlier we can understand and the earlier we can develop a personalized program, the milder the approach can be for its remediation. And that's the whole functional medicine approach, trying to find the right tools to use at the right time to produce the right and best result.
Do you want to share a story, perhaps, of someone's success using this that's maybe stood out for you?
Yes. When you ask that, I can just think of rolling over my mind so many many really great experiences. I've been so fortunate over my life. I'd have to say that that's probably, in my memories, the most powerful thing that's kept me in this field so long are the remarkable people that I've met who have really had miracles in their lives as it relates to taking charge of their health and implementing these concepts that we're discussing in a very successful way. And there's probably nothing more valuable in being in this field than having those kind of vicarious experiences of watching people go through and implement these programs and really have miraculous outcomes. So let me give one recent one that I think illustrates it. And this really is... I share the success with my colleague, Dr. Dale Bredesen, who's at UCLA at the Alzheimer's Research Department there in charge of it, who has been actively working as a neuroscientist in developing methods for both recognizing and intervening in successful intervention in Alzheimer's dementia. And he just recently published a paper just within the last few months that recounted clinical histories of about 25 patients that had Alzheimer's dementia, various degrees of severity. But one that really stood out is an individual that we both have worked with and know, who was a very high performer, very successful professional, a woman who had run large companies, been a very successful entrepreneur, was known for her sharpness of mind. And over time, as she was about 56 years of age, she started to recognize that somehow things were getting a little bit more foggy. This person who was just so good with numbers and so good with quick thinking that she couldn't pull things up as quickly. She was not as facile with math, and kind of her go-to skills were going away. So she went and had a neurological evaluation, was found that, yes, she was suffering from the first stages of Alzheimer's dementia. She went on the medications that were suggested, and as often the case, these drugs are very limited effectiveness and didn't seem to really have much of a positive impact for her. And she was really kind of quickly slipping away, and to the extent that she stopped being able to drive, she had real difficulty remembering exactly where she had come from when she went out of her house, and so it was almost watching her life slip away in real time in a very dramatic fashion. And at that point, she happened to be referred over to to the functional medicine model, and an evaluation was done looking at these core seven physiological processes that I discuss in the book. The imbalances in those processes were found in her particular situation. A specific program was designed, which really covered, I think, more than 20 different parts of her daily living, which included diet, lifestyle, cognition-related things, staying away from certain things that she was exposed to that were felt to be sensitizing to her immune system. And over the course, then, of the next 6 months, there was just this remarkable coming out of the clouds for her. And, you know, it's often said that Alzheimer's dementia, which is associated with these neurofibrillary tangles and hippocampal loss of function in the brain, is irreversible. You can't, once you've lost the function, you can't get it back. But in her case, it was clearly obvious. There was a dramatic improvement in her function. Her cognition improved, her memory and recall improved, and her ability to once again go back, starting to drive, get back to work. And a year down the road, I wouldn't say that, nor would she say that she was completely, quote, to the where she had been, 5 to 10 years prior. But she was at the point where she was high-functioning relative to all outside observations. Now, needless to say, what this meant to her and her family was, I really can't even communicate it. The impact that had on all of her loved ones who saw her slipping away and knowing that it was not too long before she probably wouldn't even remember them, to have her come back into the light is just like one of those unbelievable experiences that if you're even privileged to go through it vicariously, it reminds you that miracles can happen. But sometimes we need to assist miracles by asking different questions that can give you different answers. So I would say that within the last year or so, that example really stands out to me as really, once again, a reminder that things that we often consider irreversible are really bounded by our own not asking the right questions.
Yes, and thank you so much for asking so many of the right questions. It's just wonderful, I think, Jeffrey, that a book like The Disease Delusion is not only available to everyone, but it also can be read and understood by the average citizen and brought into their life. So thank you very much for this wonderful opportunity for all of us.
Well, I've so enjoyed talking with you, and the quality of your questions has really been fun for me. So thank you, and I thank all of your listeners for the work they're doing in promoting good health. It's a very important part of, I think, all of what we do each day. Our culture right now has way too much burden of disease that we can do something about by just focusing our energies in the right way.
Healthcare isn't always simple, but Dr. Jeffrey Bland sure helps bring it down to a level that we can begin to understand the workings of our own body and how to really assist it in our everyday life. His book is The Disease Delusion. For any guest information, to listen to archives, share resources, and sign up for weekly programming, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. And for podcasting on iTunes, Tributaries Radio. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.